the lore of chakras that is preserved. And the little materials I'm handing out tonight, I've also given you the colors there on, so this just so you can see how it's represented in a modern, classically oriented Hindu yoga system. So that makes then a total of 13 chakras. Up to here is 6, and then you count 7 more. And when we attune, do attunements, and I talk about the chakras above the head or above the higher octaves and all that sort of thing, I'm now talking about an even higher system of chakras that exist in the aura, and we can regard them as 17 at that point. But these are not anything, they're totally unopened, but they're not functioning for us in a significant way at this time, and they won't be for some time, but they still can be attuned, and that's what we attune with, a very low generating tone. We attune all the way up here. And when you attune chakras, you attune from the bottom up to the top. You start with the lowest and go up to the highest. And that's what we do with sound. Now, we do not work with individual chakras like the yogis do. There would, in fact, be many dangers if we were to start adopting these things. The dangers in trying to raise kundalini and work with chakras and use techniques to do this sort of thing are manifold, and I've discussed them here. But basically, the ways that people abuse this energy or try to prematurely open it or run it through their bodies, which is like trying to run electricity, like trying to run 1,000 volts and 1,000 amps of current and 1,000 volts of current through little thin wires that won't hold them. You can do damage to the very fine etheric reticulum that is there to contain and hold the higher evolutionary forces and energies. Symbolically in the Hindu systems, coiled at the root chakra is visualized the serpent fire, the kundalini, which is also a goddess and seen as other ways. And that as the kundalini force is raised up through Sushumna at the center of the spine, again, not a physical anatomical structure, but an etheric structure. And it originates with Ida and Pingala in a man in the left and right testicles and a woman in the left and right ovaries, and then they all begin together at the root of the spine. The Ida and Pingala each qualify, though, two very different kinds of forces. Ida and Pingala qualify forces that we classify as solar and lunar, masculine and feminine, left and right, or right and left, I should say, and they work in certain ways with breath. Now, breath is like blood. Breath is, you cannot control your heartbeat, and you wouldn't want to. But you can control your breath, and your breath articulates to the subtle elements of your body. It is through the breath, the airy, that breath and blood that you articulate and communicate. And by the control of breath and the proper use of breath, one can access and control and make certain kinds of flowages of different kinds of pranic and other etheric forces in the body by use of breath. It can also do all kinds of things to mess you up very much. People who played around with psychedelic drugs, which did in fact prematurely arouse kundalini, but then also caused all kinds of psycho-etheric problems by the premature awakening or opening of these things, was the burning of them. And many people that did this really lost their whole ground of this incarnation for spiritual growth and development because of what they did to themselves with psychedelics. And wrong meditation can do that. Wrong kinds of sexual practices can do that. And there are other kinds of forces that can do that. And any deliberate attempts to raise kundalini beyond the forces that the natural opening provides, and the natural openings are all we're going to be talking about, And the practices I'm going to give you are not practices to be done every day, but things that you can do from time to time in order to experiment with and see what happens and see, have the experience. The abuse of attempting to raise the kundalini power and do other kinds of things with it results about people who want to gain siddhas or psychic powers or have visions or become psychic or whatever. The abuse of that has resulted in insanity, in mental incompetence, in moral problems and all kinds of things among people. These diagrams that I've given you are taken from a book that I document, and they are showing the placement of the anterior and posterior bifurcations of Sushumna at when it reaches the head, and how the Ida and Pingali terminate on at each nostril, and the three of them come together above the nostrils, and at that point, at that juncture, where Ida Pingala and Sushumna come together, when Kundalini is able to be maintained safely at this point, then a person starts to have the psychic openings and other kinds of things that occur, and one is beginning to be able to work with the higher aspects of spirituality. And I should say that I put in some information here also about the raising of Kundalini. There are basically three spots in the body that are considered to be the major obstacles or the major, perhaps the major hurdles in the drama of slowly raising spiritual consciousness in the body. And they are known as the three granthis, or the three knots, the three barriers. There's Brahma granthi about at the navel level. At about the heart level, Vishnu granthi and Rudra granthi is at this place we just mentioned, at the ajna place. Now, there is a technique that I will give that people can safely do from time to time to raise kundalini in your body, to raise spiritual consciousness, that is more effective than the method I gave you earlier, which was simply a breath technique in which you placed your left hand over your heart. You form the triangle with these three, and when you're doing this, you would be having your grail talisman here, and so that it would fit over this. In your right hand, you block the nostrils in such a way as to regulate a very thin stream of airflow through both nostrils, and then breathe in very slowly, concentrating, focusing on light. And when you got to the top of your breath, you held it for some time and then slowly breathe out through the mouth, ending in a hum. And you did this two or three times, and you found if you did this that this was effective in bringing it, making it easier to see the light in the Ilyastra meditation, because it's one very innocuous and not very dangerous way of raising kundalini. When I do it, because I've been meditating, doing the Ilyastra meditation for so long, it can. Doing this more than once or twice can makes the light too bright and it gets bad for me. But Tess has done it and it's worked out pretty well. Well, there is a much more powerful thing you can do using a yogic technique. The yogic technique is that indeed at these points in the body, at these points of the knots, the granthis, what you can do is you can do a forcing technique to raise kundalini up to above the level of the first granthi, and then you can close your body off there so the kundalini can't go back down again. Then you do another technique to raise it up above this, and then you close it off there, and a third technique to raise it up the head, and you close it off here with the chin. And when you do that, you then can sit in meditation, and it is possible for you to sometimes affect what is called Soma chakra. Soma chakra is really a part of the Sahasrara chakra. It is really the bottom part, or the we might visualize it as root chakra. We might visualize this is root chakra. When I speak of root chakra, I do not mean the root of the spine. This relates to it. Root chakra is the bottommost portion of crown chakra, and that is what we work at attuning when we do. And this is graphically represented in this way. Soma chakra. What is soma? Soma is the elixir. Soma is the has the properties of the philosopher's stone. Soma is the amrita. It is a nectar that in yogi mythology is released in the head and normally flows downwards and is lost in the body in just a feeling of bliss. But if you retain it in the head, it builds enlightenment and it builds immortality of the body cells and so on. So this is a method in which you can use to stimulate Soma chakra, but it isn't something you should do every day, but it's something you should do a couple of sometimes, enough times to know how to do it. And this is in order to do this, I should explain a little bit more about the use of the nostrils then. Ida and Pingala, nadis or channels, I notice I got it misspelled here at one point here, constitute Vishushumna only 3 of the 10 major channels, and there are many, many more. And the chakras are accessed by many peripheral channels. And if we, in working with a certain chakra, very often we will not work at that point or right on that. We'll work with a minor chakra related to that. That's by analogy, many great saints choose to live on ley lines from natural sacred spots or power spots rather than on the spots because they find that they don't have the control and they aren't able to do their work living there. For example, Doris, who chose not to live on Mount Shasta, even though that was her sacred mountain. She lived 30 miles away in Wairika on a ley line from Mount Shasta. Or the Alcyon community, which is in the Baconian Foundation land, which is on a ley line for perhaps 50, 60 miles away from Mount Shasta, is the best place to work with the energy of the sacred spot rather than right there on the mountain. The same thing is true with chakras. And Ida, which is the left nostril, which is the channel that is accessed through breathing in the left nostril, and concerns the left eye, the left ear, the left nostril, and the left certain parts of the body, and terminates at the in the left nostril and originates in the left testicle or the left ovary. Ida generates a feminine lunar currents of intaking, synthesizing maternal energy. And this energy is comparable to the etheric magnetic currents and the etheric magnetic flux and reflux that occurs in the etheric bodies. In a man, this is a very important energy because it's that which balances his masculinity. Ida is needed for healing and stability and ease and meditation, and especially needed during the waking hours when we have a preponderance of masculine solar energy from the sun. I'm not speaking of solar prana, I'm talking about masculine solar energy. For the sun is the exterior manifestation of Tifereth, which is the Christ energy. And during the daylight hours, there's a preponderance of that energy. And you will find, if you have ever carefully observed yourself, you've got a little bit of a cold and your nostrils sort of close and one side is closed and then it opens up and the other side closes and it opens up. You'll notice that during the daylight hours, very often if you have a little bit of a cold, that your left nostril, if you're a man especially, will tend to be more open a lot more than your right nostril. And then at night when you sleep, when the sun's energy is gone, you will notice that both men and women will notice that your right nostril will tend to be opened up more than your left nostril, and that is because your body is naturally balancing, because the right nostril carries the energies of Pingala, the psychoetheric energies that qualify masculine solar currents of outflowing, analyzing, paternal, projecting kind of energy. It's needed for purification and for fiery vitality and for deep intellectual discrimination and insight. Especially more important to have at nighttime when there is no, those forces are on the wane. And in fact, in the old traditions, breathing through the right nostril was something that warriors did before they went out to fight and all this sort of thing. So the left nostril and right nostril are also very important to you if in the merging and communion meditations that we have described, and these practices are important to do as often as you can do. One is undertaking a practice of merging. that there are two kinds of ways that people tend to be. Well, some are the intakers and some are the outflowers, as I mentioned. If you are an intaker, if you are bringing, if your way of merging consciousness with something else is to bring it, is through the sense of bringing it into yourself, which is more of a feminine way of approaching it, then you will probably be a person who is most successful at the sense of merging the mind and the heart center, so to speak, which are actually two different brains in the body. When we, at the very beginning, when we do this, that if you close your eyes, it'll be easier for you to imagine your mind descending down into your chest and existing down in your chest and at that center. Then you're an intaker. If it's easier for you to imagine lifting up the heart energy and bringing it up into the brain, then you are an outflower, an outgoer, and that is the way you will merge best. The way you will merge best is by projection into things, projecting yourself into things. And you can integrate the use of left and right nostril with the kind of breathing that you do. You might remember that in these merging exercises, I said if you're intaking, use the left nostril. If you're outflowing, use the right nostril. You will use the right nostril for breathing when you are doing any kind of projecting, when you learn how to do projecting. You use the left nostril when we do for doing certain kinds of psychic analysis of things. So the left and right eye also carry the respective energies of these nadis, such that the left eye is best used for intaking and scrying, and the right eye is best used for projecting and analyzing and putting, sending out energies, and so on. If in minor conjunction communion practices, when one takes in a blessing, for example, from something, if you're receiving and intaking in that way, you inhale through both the nostril, but you look at the object predominantly through the left eye. If you're sending out a blessing, which your techniques weren't dealing with at this point, in an exhale, you look predominantly through the right eye. Now, if you have some expertise with your eyes, you will know that you can make your eyes cross a little bit, and you can make the image go double, and you can look at one of the images or the other of the images and things like this. You should get proficient at playing with your eyes and getting so you can do that. If you can't, you might experiment with it a little bit. Otherwise, you just have to close an eye or something like that. But it's better to be able to have a consciousness of it that way. Now, technique to raise Kundalini. Kundalini is a partially latent divine psychonoetic energy. We're not talking about an etheric force now. We're talking about the energy of the what we would call the soul and the nous. We're talking about monadic. We're talking about immortal stuff. That stuff that is of your higher bodies, your permanent bodies that don't disappear after death and so on. We're talking of psychonoetic energy. It is analogous to the Holy Grail, the Sam Grail. That awaits awakening in every human being. That's what Kundalini is. Kundalini is the Holy Grail. Kundalini is the elixir. Kundalini is the divine magic that transforms. Our goal is not to prematurely saturate the etheric web of the auric egg with fiery forces it's unprepared to contain, because then we would harm ourselves and do in this incarnation eventually and even future ones. People do this with psychedelic drugs, ignorant meditation techniques, certain tantric and sexual techniques or behaviors, hypnotic techniques, cultivation of yogi siddhas, and channeling or other psychic dabbling. This is not something we want to do. Our goal is to introduce Kundalini awareness, or to get a real feeling of what it is, by offering certain experiences that are to be repeated only rarely and as directed to you by interior guidance. These are not practices that you should do every time you get an opportunity or you should try to do every day. We don't introduce anything to the temple that takes a lot of time in terms of your practice. The few practices that we have that we introduce that go with different empowerments are things that have to be done. For example, in the first empowerment we had the practice that had to be done for a month. With the Ilyastra meditation, it's a practice that needs to be done every day, but only for 5 minutes. There are other kinds of practices that we will introduce into our lives that will be regular. But this is not a practice. This is simply a technique that you can use to do some experimenting with. So we want also to add certain techniques to the Ilyastra meditation practice that can be used from time to time, such as the little breathing technique I showed you. Now, the full-blown version of the breathing technique, of which the breathing technique is a simpler and less powerful means, is this. This is the use of what is called Mulabandha and Uddiyanabandha practices. You can feel Kundalini force in your body in the following way. I'll read you what I've read. Root chakra is called Muladhara chakra, and the use of a particular muscle in your rectum that is very close to the anal sphincter is called Mula Bandha, which is the forcing up of Kundalini. A Bandha is a lock that you do in your body with muscles, physical muscles that block certain channels, and it also that your muscles are not just physical; your muscles are also etheric, and they will block certain etheric channels. You can force up Kundalini from Muladhara to a point above the solar plexus where there's a natural knot or obstruction to Kundalini, and then you can force it through that knot, and then you can close the knot with a bandha, with a lock. And then it's trapped above there, and then you do one other thing, and then you force it above the next trap, and the next trap here, and then you trap it in your head. After you would to do this to have this experience, you would first do a regular chakra attunement using the sounds and the visualizations that I provided, or just a good meditation. Then what you do is you squeeze and hold the Mulabandha muscle. Now, where is that muscle? That muscle is a muscle. If you were to give yourself an enema and try to keep the liquid from falling out of your rectum, you would squeeze something. And if you can visualize what that is and squeeze it, you will find that when you squeeze that muscle, it gives you a very strong sense of energy right down here. Do you know what I'm talking about? Have you been able to find that? Okay. It's a kind of muscle kids squeeze and they get real excited. They go like that. Or if you get too much nervous energy, you feel real nervous, sometimes you might even shiver and shake this muscle. I don't know. I used to do this all the time when I was a kid. I don't know if any of you do this. But it is the muscle, to find that muscle that you have to squeeze. It has a very powerful, it's not just like squeezing muscle here, here, or some part in your body. It's the very root of your body. You squeeze that muscle, and you can feel this fiery, hot energy just squeeze up like this if you practice it. It's almost your anal sphincter. It's really actually a little bit above that, but it's part of that whole setup. And it's a rectal muscle you squeeze. If you can, if you're a man, it's the same muscle that you would squeeze if you had an erection, and you wanted to move your penis up and down, and you would squeeze like that. That would make. Now I don't know in a woman what it is. I think with a woman, it's the muscle you would squeeze. It's like the muscle you would squeeze to contract your vagina consciously, like this. It's that muscle. And when you get so you can squeeze it, the way that the yogis did it, they didn't know how to do that, I guess, because the descriptions I read, they put their heel underneath their rectum and just pushed up, and that did the same thing for them. But it's something you can just do by when you find it and you squeeze it. Now, you squeeze it, and when you do that, as you're squeezing it, and you feel all this energy coming up with your left palm over the heart, the fingers of your right hand restricting your nostrils, you do the slow inhale through both nostrils up to the top of the, with the eyes closed, and focusing on this rising energy of the spine. At the end of the inhale, you then have to, when everything is up to the top and you're holding it for a second, then you exhale very quickly through the mouth, and as you exhale, you quickly tighten up your muscles, starting from down here all the way up to, starting from down here, below your navel, all the way up to your rib cage, which you do when you hold your stomach in at attention, except you start low and you bring them all in, and you do that as you expel the air from your lungs until all the air is out. You don't end with a hum or anything, you just expel. And then at that point you have trapped kundalini and energy above the navel, and you're holding it as long as it's in that way. And of course, as you're exhaling, you relax this rectal muscle completely. And when you've reached the top of the inhale and you're holding it, you relax the muscle and you do this quick expulsion and you do this one. It's best if you can master this, you only do this one time. You don't want to do this over and over because it can be very unsettling your nervous system. Now, but I would say when you're beginning, do this three times, but do it at your own pace. And the reason I said do it three times is so that you can get good at it. And the third time, you've got it, you hold it. And then on the fourth inhale, when the breath is held, you perform Jaladandra Bandha, which is when it's all up here and it's when you are inhaling, after you let all your muscles loose again, you inhale. This time, as you inhale, through the two nostrils, with these muscles as tight as you can keep them while you inhale, then you get to the top of your breath and you put your chin down on your chest real hard, and you don't want to wreck your neck, but you put it down and hold it like that so you can really feel it. And then you exhale through the nostrils, not through the mouth, through the nostrils. And then you can breathe very slowly through the nostrils and stay in that position and with your eyes closed, and you will find what you may experience, and you probably will, a strong bliss-like sensation, and that's the stimulation of soma chakra. And you don't want to stay in that position too long, but you can do that for a while. And then if you want, you can open your chin, breathe more normally, and just meditate normally, and you will have a very good meditation. But this is a powerful way to do that. Now, the other thing I wanted to discuss was pranic breathing. I gave kind of a description of it before. When the way you nourish your subtle bodies of the auric egg, the way you nourish your etheric bodies is not just by eating food. You wolf down your food, you will get the basic chemical nourishment that you need, that your physical body needs. But it will not nourish any of your four ethers very well. And people who don't taste, people who don't feel, who don't have the sensibilities, the sensitivities, and haven't delved deeply into the senses, are people who are insensitive. One of the greatest trainings I think a child ever had was, I believe it was William James, the philosopher, whose father made him work blindfolded and deal with his senses. Have you read about the early training of William James?
No, I haven't.
Very interesting. His father developed him so he could truly use all of his senses. He got so he could use his tactile senses almost like as a blind man would be able to, and his hearing senses and everything. And he became a great philosopher who had some very interesting ideas that really have never been fully explored. I don't think they have been.
You have a very interesting book.
What one is that? Psychology of Religious
Experience.
Oh, yes, right, yes, of course.
Wasn't
that's right.
Was he a professor at Harvard?
Yeah, right, yeah. Anyway, I'll read you what I've said here because this is very important. We've discussed the fact that chewing food slowly, masticating completely, as well as thoroughly tasting, smelling, feeling the texture, and even hearing the sounds of food as it is eaten, is the means through which etheric nourishment is assimilated. Just as when you breathe in, the place where the assimilation takes place is at the top of the breath when it's held. So if you want to assimilate solar prana, or if you want to assimilate just the other pranas that are in when you're breathing, deep breathing exercises doesn't mean breathing in deeply in and out deeply. It means breathing in deeply and holding it. The clue is in the holding. And in that space where you hold, that is where the higher bodies are nourished by these pranic and other forces that are brought in. Now, and that's true with breathing. With eating, it's the same. People who don't experience the subtle and deep sensory gourmet-like aspects of food do not assimilate well on the subtle levels, and they remain coarse and insensitive to psychoanalytic realities. The same is true of listening to music. Developing a taste for great music is still rare among humanity who prefer the hypnotic rhythms and repetitive harmonies of pop music to the subtleties of a Brahms string quartet. But those who take the time and effort to learn music and develop a taste for the real gourmet banquets of sound that are available to all through recordings and radio nourish their higher and finer bodies and become more refined, more sensitive, more profoundly responsive to spirit. The same holds for painting and the arts, as well as for love of nature and fragrance and architecture and the dramatic arts and poetry and literature and certain refined sports and game competitions and so on. Development of a taste for these things creates channels for the more effective nourishment of the etheric bodies. When you make yourself sensitive and you make yourself refined and you make yourself able to see the distinctions in things and you start to appreciate the subtleties and beauties of anything, it's all sensory things. It's through the senses that the antahkarana is built to the higher senses and the higher bodies. And when you are in the presence of something in art or nature that moves you and it blesses you and evokes higher sentiments in you, maybe a sunrise or a certain kind of music or a painting, something that brings tears to your eyes, then you can ingest